fighting for America.
The media market personality Marconi goes to Kevin Miller, KIDOAM, Boise, Idaho.
Fighting for Idaho.
I just want to say to all of you, thank you for believing in radio and local radio. I want to thank Kevin Godwin. I want to thank all my listeners.
Fighting for you.
But in reality, this award is about all of you that believe in radio, that believe in touching people's lives and making a great living at it. God bless you all. Thank you.
Boise's Mr. Right, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Well, I don't know about a great living, but you justify your existence. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. That video posted at 580KIDO.com. We'd love you to check it out. Give us a click. Share it with your friends. It is very entertaining. And we'll strive to be entertaining and informative this morning, as we do each and every day here at 580 KIDO. We're joined by our great friend, Jonathan Wohlstetter. Letter from the Capitol is his blog. Jonathan, good to have you with us once again.
Always good to be with you, Kevin, and with your audience.
You know, it's always reassuring in these troubled times that you're still out there at the forefront giving us the information, no matter where we may be. Talk a little bit about Letter from the Capitol and what type of information you provide the folks.
Well, Letter from the Capitol is my blog, which posts several times weekly. It is a one-stop shop for all my stuff. You can link to my Twitter page. You can buy my two books online, link to the dozens of articles I've written and to podcasts that I began last year that are now about biweekly, and, of course, to past things over the last 9 years that I've posted a letter from the Capitol. So it's the best place to get my stuff on the web. And it's OL, Letter from the Capitol. You can Google that or type in the www in the .com.
Well, we always appreciate the information that you provide. Let's start with your blog here at the front page of Letter from the Capitol on His Majesty's Secret Service, talking about what has happened with the Secret Service. I'm sure you're very surprised like the rest of us.
Yeah, I am shocked. And what is really appalling about it to me is it's not simply the staggering serial incompetence of an agency that had a reputation for being very good, but in addition to that, it's one other factor that is really amazing to me. President Obama is a quintessential family man. Everyone agrees, even people like me who are among his severest critics. He obviously desires to protect his family and has taken steps, very sensible ones in many ways, to see that his children are sheltered as much as possible too. But here you have a case where apparently one factor in his reluctance to fire Julia Pearson, and I take the Secret Service chief, and I take her resignation as being a de facto firing, else she would have resigned the day before at the hearing, was that she's a woman. She was brought in to end the frat boy atmosphere, which it was believed by many of the folks led to the Secret Service sex scandals in Colombia and what have you. And the priority there was, I think, political correctness in a sense. Not that those escapades weren't serious, they were breaches of security. But if that was even a factor, that she was a woman and you didn't want to fire the first female head of the Secret Service, you're talking here about protecting his family. And the only thing that you should want there, the only factor should be excellence, not mere competence. And here you have the White House security breaches where one guy bum rushes his way through what are supposed to be five acknowledged public layers, and are in fact more than that, of security. Gets through snipers, SWAT teams, an alarm that's turned off at the request of the usher's office, and bowls over a female agent. There's another politically incorrect thing to say. The fact is that every one of these people who was inside there should be somebody who can handle a burly guy coming through the door. and gets to the foot of the stairway leading up to the first couple's bedroom. When the shots were fired in 2011 on the south lawn on the other side, one of them strikes a window. Broken glass is on the floor inside the residence. It's discovered 4 days later by a housekeeper. The Secret Service supervisors didn't believe the reports of agents on the ground that they were gunshots. They felt, well, gee, maybe they were backfires of a car. This is stupefying incompetence. And then you have this guy who, with three assault convictions, assault and battery convictions, who was armed, who's in the right next to the president in an elevator, the security contractor. This is absolutely, and in an area, again, where the president has the most incentive to manage. He can't even manage protecting his family in a competent fashion. And that leads to wondering if he can manage anything.
Jonathan Wolstetter with us. No. Right. Letter from the Capitol, 580-KIDO. Let's continue on with the Secret Service. And you bring up the point, the guy that fired the, I believe, the AK-47 rounds into the building was from Idaho, and he was mentally deranged. Jonathan, you study the Middle East, and we'll talk more about this, but if I'm Hamas, Hezbollah, ISIS, ISIL, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, this is the blueprint. I mean, if the crazies can do this, what about the professional terrorists?
Well, you just, all one would have to say is you get three or four guys. Let's say it's even one who scales the fence, even a self-starting fanatic like the Fort Hood shooter, or the workplace beheader in Oklahoma, whose militant Islam attraction apparently is not being considered a factor. All it would have taken is one who could have detonated a bomb. Just pulled out an automatic weapon and started firing. Apparently the first family had just left, I think, an hour or two ago, or whatever. And the guy that made the tackle was a security guard who actually had finished his duty. He was hanging around a bit and was getting ready to leave. So it could have been. Now, I assume if the president were there, they would have had more people present. But if it's a bomb, if that guy gets through the front door and gets anywhere in proximity and is able to detonate, bye-bye.
I totally agree with you, and we're not talking fiction. This could happen. We've seen the blueprint now from the crazies, and the idea that the alarm was muted because allegedly the house ushers said that it's annoying, the doors weren't locked.
Well, and you look, even George Bush had a close call when he was overseas, I think in Georgia around the time of the Rose Revolution in 2004. Somebody with a grenade got fairly close to the presidential party. Now, you can't, it does go back at some point to JFK saying if somebody wants to give his life to take mine, they're going to be able to do it. But ever since Reagan's near assassination, it's become almost impossible to get close to a president in many circumstances. Here at the White House, it's apparently a lot less difficult. He went to a fundraiser in the UN in New York on the Upper West Side while he was up to speak at the UN General Assembly. And somebody wrote a blog post about how they couldn't get to their own apartment because of that. There was airtight security. George Will told about giving a dinner party for Obama after he had been elected at his house and in suburbia here, that his neighbor next door, who was sitting on the lawn, was told by the Secret Service, go inside. They had no basis for this. And one wishes the neighbor had taken that one to court, but you don't know whether you can trust the judges these days. So you have this, on one hand, in situations where there is certainly less compelling need for airtight security, they seem to have it. And, of course, they're great at snarling traffic at rush hour in Washington or in New York or wherever. But here at the White House, where you would think the protections would be greatest, they didn't have it. They were praising the restraint of not using their weapons. the Secret Service management. Well, maybe if they don't want to shoot everybody who comes through the door, then have a taser at least, for God's sakes. They're worried about ricochets, something like that, if there are people in the house at the time, tourists or staff. All right, that's not an unreasonable worry in some cases, but at least have something you can use.
Well, and you go back to Julia Pearson getting the boot or resigning. You know, apparently we're hearing, Jonathan, that the White House stood solidly behind her until she resigned.
Well, okay, I would have thought, my guess had been that she was probably fired behind the scenes, but maybe she did do the right thing. This morning I was focusing on the forming of a commission, which is appropriate because they need a top to bottom review of the agency at this point. But if they weren't prepared to fire her after that, that's even more damning as to the power of political correctness. Because, again, we're talking about this is his family. He should be in a towering rage. Behind the scenes, he doesn't have to do so publicly. But any president, you can imagine, if any of this happened when Ronald Reagan was president, Nancy Reagan would have taken these people and personally beheaded them if she had to. I'm being a little facetious, but she was hugely protective of Reagan. And the thing is, nobody here, where are the, I don't know, behind closed doors, some of the White House staff people are saying something, although they're so politically correct, one suspects that they weren't doing it. This is absolutely off the charts that anything else but having the highest competence in that area. And for those of us who lived through, as I did at age 16, the Kennedy assassination, a president, now that's more than a half century ago, large numbers of voters have no idea how spectacularly and hideously disruptive such an event is. Because in a democracy where we are accustomed to changing governments by the voters, in effect, the assassin wields a veto, nullifies the results of an election in a single horrific moment. So, people have no memory of that. Even the last attempt with Reagan, which came frighteningly close, was March. I remember it as if it were yesterday, although I was in Utah at the time skiing, March 30th, 1981. And bear in mind that there, the only reason Reagan survived was because a Secret Service agent who just died last year, who should be remembered as a hero that Jerry Parr was, saw the color of the blood coming out from Reagan, saw it was dark, and knew that was deep trouble, and told the driver not to go back to the White House, but to head straight for George Washington Hospital. And that saved Ronald Reagan's life.
More coming up with Jonathan Wolstetter, his blog, Letter from the Capitol. Kevin Miller, 580KIDO. Let's get you to work safely and on time.
Brian Wiley, weekdays at 6. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580KIDO. Always love the knowledge from our friend Jonathan Wolstetter, Letter from the Capitol. His blog, we urge you to check it out, 580-5436 if you'd like to phone in. Jonathan, what'd you make of the Oklahoma beheading and the media's reaction to it?
Well, of course, the politically correct reaction is that nothing is done by an Islamic extremist. If a Jewish extremist beheaded somebody, I don't think that would be the reaction. Or if a white supremacist beheaded a black coworker where race was a factor, I don't think they would be saying that this was workplace violence unconnected to anything else. It could be that the primary motivation here was a quarrel, and it could have been the race angle, but certainly the association with militant Islam cannot be entirely dissociated. Now, to be fair to the authorities, there are reasons to indict him for murder rather than pursuing some of the counter-terror stuff because they can get the death penalty, and apparently there are difficulties of proof with certain kinds of cases in Oklahoma. I heard Judge Napolitano talking about this. This may be the smartest type of indictment to seek and leave it with the state level. But the media, of course, is mired in political correctness and does not want to put a large share of the media, doesn't want to put Islam in the same sentence with extremism. And this just shows the power of that concept.
Well, I'm sure you saw the clip from Melissa Harris Perry that called the guy a gentleman and workplace violence and everything. And I'm thinking to myself, this man beheaded somebody in America, and she's making it sound like they had an argument in the hallway. Where, can we explain the great disconnect?
The word gentleman is the thing that really grates there, because I would not consider someone a gentleman who slapped a woman, let alone beheaded a woman. I mean, would anybody call Ray Rice, the football player, a gentleman for punching out his fiancée? And this is, again, this is an insane politesse in the context of this, and it says more about the person using the phrase and not complimentary than it does about the criminal and probably even part terrorist self-starter here.
Jonathan, your thoughts on what's going on with ISIS, ISIL, and the bombings? Is this making America a better, safer place?
Well, in the short run, anytime someone like some group like ISIS gets hit by a warplane, this is something that pleases me. But the longer term is that he's not in this full. He's not even willing to call it a war. Here we send warplanes to drop bombs, war munitions, on people and on targets, and we're not at war. And he seems incapable of using the term because he said, I'm here to end wars, not start them. So if we got in a nuclear exchange with Russia, I have a feeling that he would say that this was, we're not at war with Russia. I'm being only slightly facetious. He just isn't going to say it.
Well, which leads us to, you know, and you research this, you know that area very well. These folks will do anything to destroy us, and we can't understand why they won't reason with us.
Well, look, we forget that unless you have a Gorbachev to deal with, you can't reason with bad people on very many things. And with these people, you can't reason with them on anything. Their agenda is very simple. You either die infidel, convert or die. And if you convert, you will of course be subjected to all the disabilities that new converts are subjected to. You're dealing here with fanatics. Whether they meet a test of sanity or not may be in part a cultural judgment we need not engage in. They are fanatics. That you can say, whether they're technically sane or insane by whoever's definition, we shouldn't be shrinks. They're fanatics. You can't reason with people like this. You have to kill them. They are going to do everything in their power to kill us.
And what's our answer to that?
Well, we don't have one with this president that's satisfactory. He's not even all in to fight these people in a war. And unfortunately, we are stuck. The voters, you know, if elections have consequences, re-elections have bigger consequences. We have more than 2 years left with this president, and he is not capable, I think, of turning around. Maybe if a nuclear weapon went off, he would, although it's depending on the circumstances, we may not even know who set it off. It's not certain that we would. So we are stuck with someone who resents all of these kinds of problems as intrusions upon the one project he passionately cares about, which is fundamentally transforming America.
And we see that.
That's a domestic thing.
Yeah, we'd see that. Quickly, can Obamacare save us, Jonathan, from Ebola?
I don't know that the two are related, except perhaps if it's a question of developing a long-term drug, but they would quickly craft an exemption for Ebola to whatever obstacles Obamacare offers. It, it, the one thing that Obamacare would is going to do is it's already raising costs, and it's creating more problems. But now, because of this Oklahoma decision, it looks certain to go to the Supreme Court.
Jonathan Wolstetter, we appreciate it, and who knows what's going to happen with the Supreme Court concerning Windsor Part 2 with these cases of same-sex marriage, with the Health Exchange Part 75, whether or not the president can make it up as it goes. Thankfully, we have you and your blog Letter from the Capitol to keep us updated, and thank you for joining us this morning, sir.
Kevin, it's always a pleasure to be with you and your audience.
Have a good day.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. That's our friend Jonathan Wolstetter. 631, you're listening to 580KIDO.
You know, every morning, you got a great show.
Good morning, world. It's a brand new day.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award. 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
638, Heidi Ho, Kevin Miller in the morning. Thank you all for joining us. Don't forget, in the 8 o'clock hour, Dick Morris will join us. In the 7 o'clock hour, we'll talk a little bit about the president, whether or not he's a lame duck. Speaking of which, man, it looks like the gubernatorial campaign is going to really blow up. We've got, I think, the Republican Governors Association. Have you heard about this? They've just released an ad against A.J. Belukoff. Speaking of our election coverage, Dave Petzo will be interviewing Governor Otter this Saturday on Money Matters right after our show. And Dave will talk to him about the health exchange and everything else. But, you know, now you've got these outside groups coming in. And really, do the Republican Governors Association care about Idaho education? And, you know, are we talking about Governor Otter fatigue? Or will the governor once again defy the critics and come into a historic consecutive third term? Keep it here for more details, and we'll start chasing our political animals to get the very latest on that, plus your phone calls as well. That'll be coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Rachel Sutherland joins us at 580KIDO. Good morning.
Good morning.
When last we heard from you, you were locked out of the White House.
Yeah, that was an interesting morning. Stuff happens. It's always an exciting job. I can assure you.
Well, I believe the only thing you were probably armed with was your recorder and videos and everything else. So.
And a cell phone, yeah, doing two ways in the dark. But yeah, and I had a little mouse run across my feet. So that was all very fun.
Not as fun as what happened the past few days concerning the Secret Service.
Right. This has been really incredible. We had the quick resignation of the head of the Secret Service. Julia Pearson resigned yesterday, and this comes after the security lapses at the White House, and the one in Atlanta, I think, may have been the straw that broke the camel's back there, because they tried to sweep that one under the rug. I mean, we didn't even hear about that one. And so at the hearing that was held, so the president accepted her resignation, agreed it was the right thing for her to do. So this is in contrast to, if you'll remember, with the Veterans Affairs Department and the Eric Shinseki thing that just dragged out for so long. I think the administration probably didn't want to have a repeat of that.
Well, considering the sensitivity of the topic, with all due respect to the veterans, we are talking about the first family's security, and we're talking about the institution of the White House. And the fact that, you know, we had the crazy guy from Idaho that now is in jail that fired the shots, and no one knew about it, and the people said, oh, those were backfires. That's not reinforcing competency and keeping the president safe.
That's right. And it is making people wonder about the Secret Service. There was a one time when, you know, we always just think of the Secret Service as being elite, and you can't get past them, and there's almost sort of this mystique about them. Now we're seeing them being kind of fallible, and that's not something we want to see when we're dealing with the White House and the first family.
And the crazies of ISIS and ISIL and everyone else that wants to harm the president, a threat foreign or domestic. Was this kind of a flip-flop from the White House? Because from what I heard, they were behind her before they accepted her resignation.
Yeah, I know. It does seem like a total 180, people getting whiplash from having watched this. Because it looks like the president at first, yeah, was saying we're completely behind her. It could have been, though, that this other security breach in the elevator really came to light. And the fact that it appears that the Secret Service wanted to keep that secret, that didn't go over so well. So that could have been contributing to the change there.
Right, the guy with the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So for people that may not be familiar with it at 580KIDO, the president was in an elevator with a guy with a gun.
That's right. This happened at the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta last month when he went there. He was on travel, and there was a security guard, a contractor, who was took an elevator ride with the president. And he started filming the president with a cell phone, and one of the agents said, please stop doing that, and apparently he wouldn't stop doing that, which is bizarre and unprofessional in itself. And so they ran a background check on this individual and found that he had 3 felony convictions related to assault and battery. And so that wasn't known. I think he was subsequently fired. And there, you know, the question is how did he end up in the elevator with the president?
Well, and here's something that I don't get, Rachel. Maybe I've listened to Eric Cartman too many times, respect my authority, or the idea of, you know, you don't mess with the Secret Service. There are places you just don't go if you're a good patriotic American. Because, you know, if there is a threat to the president, the Secret Service will investigate. They have that uber level of competency, and there is no second take. There are no second chances. So they have to err on the side of caution, extreme caution. You know that when you go to the White House and they vet you. And then all of a sudden we have this idea that a guy with a gun is in there and filming, and they say to stop, and he doesn't. I mean, I would be afraid of being stuffed and cuffed and, you know, spending a month at Gitmo for that.
Yeah, right. When I'm at the White House, if someone tells me to step over here, I step over there. I mean, I do exactly what they tell me to do. I can't imagine someone defying a Secret Service agent, but apparently that goes on.
Do we know anything more about the, not to be confused with the guy that shot at the White House or the guy with the gun? I guess we'll just call him the knife-wielding lunatic. What's next for him?
Omar Gonzalez, yeah, he faces some serious charges. I'm not exactly sure where his case stands right now. He was due back in court. I would imagine that they're going to pretty much throw the book at him. You can't be doing that. You can't be running up into the White House. But it does appear that he had some mental issues because he was, of course, yelling about the atmosphere collapsing and things like that. So maybe that will be taken into consideration as well.
Rachel Sutherland with us at 580KIDO. Kevin Miller in the morning. She's with Fox News Radio. Rachel, we appreciate you joining us here, and we thank you very much for making yourself available. You know, again, it comes down to this, and how many people that obey the law, that love America, that respect authority, that understand the issue of protection of the president? To me, and whether you agree with the president or not, there's nothing more sacred in this country. And if you've ever had the unfortunate mess of being stuck in traffic because when the president comes to town, they shut everything down. They shut the highways down. And you literally, it's like the stop of a NASCAR race where they give you the black flag or the red flag, I guess. And you just sit there in your car till the limousines go by, until Air Force One is out. And heck, if you're ever flying and Air Force One is coming into your airport, they shut everything down. Now, never mind our uber attachment to the world and everything, it's shut down. You're back to the Middle Ages. And if all of us can understand that, where is the lack of respect? And it's not, I don't want to say it's a race thing. I don't want to say it's anything else. But, I mean, to me, that is driven into us that we should, you know, protect our president. And, you know, some of the problems that I have with some of these places, you know, they can teach kids foreign languages, but they won't teach them the Pledge of Allegiance. Think about that for a minute. But Gonzalez, he needs to go. Crazy man. He's already, I think he's getting 20 years. Think about what would have happened if, and I know a lot of us, whether it's we were talking to Kerry Patton or Mike Baker or any of our other friends at 580KIDO, these real life heroes that give us their insight. There are no second chances. And how many of you read the book, Not a Clear and Present Danger, Not the Sum of All Fears, the Clancy book where the Japanese destroy our financial system and actually fly a plane into the Capitol building, wipes everybody out, Jack Ryan, he becomes the president. He was the vice president. It's a little, Clancy in his, you know, later books, Jack Ryan went over the top. Jack Ryan's a hero if you don't know who he is. And just the idea of somebody doing that was shocking to read. And even in the post-9/11 world, in the ADD Twitter feed world that we live in, I hesitate to even say what Jonathan Wolstetter was saying. You could have, and we've talked about this, you could have some lunatic strap on a bomb, run in there, and through the incompetency, through everything else, destroy a landmark and destroy the First Family. And I don't know about you, but I was trained to even utter those things could get you in trouble with the government. And, you know, we could talk about the dialogue that we're in and, you know, people don't respect the office of that. We have to. And maybe that starts with us at 580KIDO. Here's Julia Pearson saying, you know, she made a bad call at the line of scrimmage. Well, just like the equipment. We move on. Coming up next, Julia Pearson, I promise, saying, quote, unquote, she made a bad call at the line of scrimmage. Let's get you to work safely and on time.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
I do not think the security plan was properly executed.
There we have it. Former head of the Secret Service, Julia Pearson. I told you we would have her. With us, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. So getting back to, if we can't keep the president safe, how can we stop everyone else? Quite frankly, I think that she should have been given the boot as opposed to resigning.
In a meeting earlier this afternoon, the director of the Secretary of Homeland Security met with Director Pearson and accepted her resignation at that time.
Yeah, too bad we don't fire people anymore. Well, we get fired, but not the beautiful people. And we're not just talking about the wrestlers. Tom Munns, he's wrestling with things at 580KIDO.
Good morning, Kevin.
Tom Munns, TomMunns.com, Munns Tom Twitter. I always like it when you tell the story where you meet with Brad Little, and what does he say to you?
Is that for did you meet me from the... You always tell me I'm guilty of changing the subject.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I like Brad. I had breakfast with Tom Looney yesterday. It was awesome.
Really?
Yeah, we're staying in the same hotel. It was pretty cool.
You're traveling with Tom Luna.
No, I'm not traveling with Tom Luna.
Not that there's anything wrong with you spending time with Tom Luna.
No, he's all right. He's a good guy. I like him.
Yeah, didn't you say he was like the king of Common Core and this, that, and the other, and he should be thrown out on his ear and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah, but Kevin, look.
Well, what's with you, Tom? I mean, you have this great rhetoric.
I know where you're going.
And then all of a sudden you're like trying to be their friend, and when they don't want to be your friend, you're like, whatever.
Kevin, if you and I ever disagree or any of my friends ever disagree with me, I don't hold grudges and I don't hate them. What I realized in the last 5 years and 6 years since I've started doing this is you can't beat people over the head and expect them to like you. So what I've had to do is try to change my tactics. I genuinely love people. I love Idaho. I love people. My agenda is nothing having to do with myself. It's all about trying to restore liberty to this great nation and the people in Idaho that I believe deserve it. And I genuinely do. I mean, I don't agree with Governor Otter, but I love the guy. I mean, he's personable. He's that way.
You had breakfast with Tom Luna, and you love Governor Otter.
Well, and Tom Luna has been.
Did you hear about states awaiting a high court ruling on gay marriage?
Well, yes, but we were talking about something else, you know.
Were just talking about loving men.
Well, no, oh yeah, in a heterosexually appropriate way.
I didn't say that. You said that.
I hear this messing me up this morning. Yeah. So, no, you were talking to me about law enforcement, about how I hate them one day and I love them the next day. And the point is...
Now, you do, Tom. You sit there and talk, they have no rights and everything, and then you go, I'm going on, I love the police tour. I follow you on the Facebook. I'm always watching you, Tom Munns.
You know what? I'm glad for that, because if I need to be held accountable, for sure. What that is all about, if you ever give me the chance to say it, is, you know what? We all make mistakes in this country. Mm. We've all let things go to hell. So when we try to blame a politician, we better start pulling the plank out of our own eye first and realize that we have the government that we deserve through our own ignorance. When law enforcement has exceeded its boundaries, and I have people on Facebook that say effing cops and all this, you know, that does nothing but justify their need for militarization. So what we need to try to do is we need to try to say, even though I oppose military abuse with everything I have and police abuse and political abuse and the rest of it, we've got to be able to try to meet people where they are as men and women and husbands and wives and fathers and
daughters. Now, did you ever get together with Marv Hagedorn? I know he was looking for you. You ever find that post on Facebook?
Yeah, he said that he didn't know what you were talking about. So
what I was talking about, he posted your letter on his Facebook thing.
Well,
I saw it, and it, blah, 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 unless it's another Marv Hagedorn.
Well, I called him about it, and he didn't waste any time getting back to me. And, you know, Marv and I don't agree all the time either. But
Who do you agree with?
Hey, you know what? People need to start agreeing with Tom Munch. No,
exactly, and I'll tell you else who you agree with.
You know, we've just got to start looking at facts, you know, and realize that this nation has tried to run on opinion in abandonment of facts and law for the last few decades, and it's not working. You know, the Constitution was written not to be able to be...
Did you say Constitution?
Constitution.
You said Constitution.
Well, because I probably have... Uh-oh. Am I developing a lisp?
I don't know. Anyway, I got to let you go there, partner.
God bless you, man. I love you, Kim Millie.
I love you, too, in a heterosexually appropriate way. Remember, Tom Munz, TomMunz.com, Tom Munz Facebook, Munz Tom Twitter. Let's get you to work. Thank you, Larry. Kevin Miller in the morning. Fox News Radio is next. Stay with us.